Larry Comis,
the voice of the Kentucky Derby and the voice of the Breeders' Cup, as well as an old Hilltop Award winner.
Oh, yeah, right. Hey, Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jude.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I read the terms of the contract.
Obviously, one of you did. You should read the contract on the air. I thought that was a pretty good email.
I thought that was
well thought out by me.
Very, very good. You obviously had a little bit of free time.
Right. Yeah, well, I guess I broke rule number 3 in the contract with the fact that it said no other race calls by other announcers may be played during the interview and or 5 minutes before or after my segment.
That's right. You've broken it already. It was immediate.
I was appalled. I was appalled, and I want you to know that Lee Delapina had nothing to do with it.
No, this one's got kind of written all over it.
Oh, man. Well, look, Larry, this obviously you were there. You were part of the NBC broadcast team, as you have been for several years. You take a look at this performance by Nyquist, and at the end of your call, you were so animated about the final time and how impressive this effort really was. How good was this run by Nyquist?
I thought it was really good. I mean, you got to take the time into context because the track was pretty fast at Churchill. There's no doubt about that. But I believe it was the 12th fastest Kentucky Derby of all time, which, out of 142 runnings is pretty good. It's a couple of seconds faster than American Pharoah ran the year before, so something must be said for that. I mean, I just think that this horse, his credentials are so above and beyond what we've seen in recent years. I mean, the horse has never lost. I mean, and the one stat that I got that I thought was really cool, that there have only been 4 horses in the history of the Kentucky Derby that come out of the Derby undefeated and were named the 2-year-old champion, and 2 of them were way back when, Regret and Morvich, and then Seattle Slough, and now Nyquist. I mean, he's in an elite group there.
Yeah, there's no question about it, and he just seems to do everything effortlessly, which is what you look for, certainly, as we move forward into the Triple Crown.
Yeah, I mean, he makes it look easy, and I think that a lot of people have said that this might not be the strongest generation of 3-year-olds, but you hear that every year. It's either, oh, it's so fantastic group, or it's just not a great group, but he's the best one. And there's just no doubt about that right now. It's just a matter of whether he can get through that Triple Crown, and I think it's kind of a good thing that he's been lightly raced coming up to it. So we'll see what happens this Saturday and in 3 weeks here at Belmont.
We just played a soundbite from Kent DeSormo in the previous segment, which is always interesting when you get a soundbite from Kent because he's so animated. But he talked about having to, as he put it, put on the air brakes with Exaggerator, where he pretty much got stopped cold at one point in the race and then had to get him going again. When I went back and watched the replay, I didn't see anything that looked that egregious in terms of Exaggerator's trip. How about you?
No, me neither. I mean, I looked at it a couple of times. In fact, Travis, in his race call, mentioned, something about having trouble on the turn. Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of time where he had to wait for a bit and then go around, but I didn't see anything that was, overly dramatic. But, I wasn't on the horse. Kent was. I mean, he's either exaggerating about Exaggerator or something happened. It's hard to tell when you're not in the heat of the moment down there on the track.
Yeah, and if you're calling the race, you got bigger fish to fry than worry about that. But it's one of those things where it might be a little from column A and a little from column B, but certainly right. Not like a Fleet Alex moment or something like that. I mean,
there just wasn't a whole lot that I saw there. I mean, I didn't see too many bad trips at all looking at the replay of the race, and certainly I don't think that anything that I saw live or on replay would have cost Exaggerator the race. I mean, Nyquist has beaten him 4 times now. I mean, how many times has he got to beat him?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the last 3/16ths. Kent said that Exaggerator flattened out about the 16th pole, but what did you see down the stretch as you're calling the race?
Well, he was finishing well. In fact, there was a slight hesitation for me with with that 20 horse field and similar colors right around the eighth pole, that I had to make sure that it was him, because there were a few greens in that race, and I was pretty sure it was. But he was running okay, you know, down the stretch, and certainly was finishing better than everybody else. There wasn't anything overly dramatic about his run down the stretch that would lead me to believe that, you know, and you've seen this in the past, the horse that finished second in the Derby, oh my God, this is the Preakness horse, this has got to be the one. I didn't see that. I mean, to me, it was Nyquist who was the most impressive. And one of the other reasons why was the fact that all of the horses that were up in that early battle with Nyquist in that race all just dropped way out of it and finished nowhere except for Gunrunner. He was okay. The rest of them were far, far back. And you know, the closers had that pace to make their run. Exaggerator was the only one that really was able to take advantage of that. But I still think that overall, if you look at the way the race shaped up and the way everything went, I think the best horse won, and the best horse was the most impressive one, too.
Did you think Mario saved a little bit at the end?
I couldn't really tell. You know, at the Kentucky Derby, you know, it seems like it's tough to do something like that. Certainly more than Victor Espinoza had the year before, because he really had to get all over American Pharoah to win the Kentucky Derby. You would think that would be the case. And the other thing is Nyquist seems to do that himself. We saw that in the Florida Derby, where he turned everything off when he took the lead and started switching leads back and forth. And people said, oh, this is a tired horse. And I think he was just looking for something to do. He was bored, looking for competition. Where'd everybody go? I think that he's legit. I think he'll be a heavy favorite in the Preakness, and deservedly so.
NBC's Larry Comas with us on the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Larry, you have the privilege of calling so many of the sport's biggest races, not just the Triple Crown, but as Jude mentioned earlier, the Breeders' Cup. You call all the NYRA races. You're a Gulfstream for all the big races throughout the wintertime. When they go into the gate for the Kentucky Derby, are there still some butterflies in Larry Comas' stomach that are welling up as you get ready to call that race?
Oh yeah, for that race there always will be. I don't think that'll ever go away. It sort of builds itself up during the week. You know, you have a little bit. You're always preparing and looking at all the silks and thinking about things that you want to say. And as it gets closer and closer, you start to get that feel like, oh man, this is coming up. And then when they start playing My Old Kentucky Home, which I can listen to now, I wasn't able to listen to that in the past, but now I can without getting too fired up. The realization comes: okay, we're almost there. And as the horses approach the gate, you're sort of getting. I find myself getting sweaty palms and pacing back and forth, and just kind of trying to calm myself down. But it's very difficult to do because there's just so much on the line for the next 2 minutes and a few seconds. Once those gates open, you're on your own, and you're left with telling people what's going on. And luckily, the last couple of derbies haven't been that tough because there hasn't been a lot of dramatic runs. I haven't had to deal with, like, when Tom Durkin had that one year with Giacomo, when he just came from nowhere at the very end and there were, like, six horses near the wire. That hasn't happened yet, so I'm not looking forward to that. Hopefully it won't. I like it the way it's been the last couple of years.
Did the two Benson horses race with separate colored caps, or did they have the same colors?
They had the same colors, which was unfortunate. I don't want to be mean about this, but we did ask whether they would do that, and they refused. The owners said that this is their uniform, this is how it's going to be. Luckily, one of the two horses had a set of white blinkers, and the other one didn't. But, you know, if the track gets muddy you can't always see that. So, that, believe it or not, that makes things a whole lot more difficult for a race caller when that happens. And to be honest with you, I was rooting against them. And I'm glad their horses got beat, because if I had to guess to see which one it was, it would have not been much fun. And And it's a shame that they couldn't do that for both me or Travis. But, hey, you know, that's the way they wanted to do it, and that's the way it was.
It used to be a rule of racing. I mean, the stewards would require that. But everything has changed, you know, since I was a boy.
Now it is up to the owner to say yes or no, isn't it?
It is in Kentucky. We looked into that. The stewards were trying to help us too because they understood. They wanted to be able to tell them apart. But there was no set rule that said that you had to put different colored caps on your horses. Usually that's been done in the past as a common courtesy. Last year it was done by Zayat Stable. We asked them if they could put a different cap color on Mr. Z because originally they were going to have three horses in the Derby. El Kabir was scratched, you know, right before. But if they were going to have three, even though El Kabir was gray and Mr. Z had blinkers, you know, I talked to Justin Zayat and Ahmed Zayat, and I said, hey, could you do this for us? And they said, sure, no problem. And they did, and they won the Kentucky Derby. So there's such a thing called karma, I believe. So, you know what I'm saying.
You obviously have no interest in New Orleans Saints season tickets.
0-16.
Wow. Bitter party of one.
Yeah, if it was Robert Kraft who had the two horses in, he wouldn't be talking like this.
Oh, yeah, no. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
All right, so we talked about the Preakness being a much more relaxed race to cover, and quite frankly, it's one of the more fun events that we get to be part of all year long. Is it the same for you, Larry, as the announcer, a much more relaxed type of flow to that day and to that particular race?
You know what, it really is. The whole week is just way more relaxed. It's fun because there's always still a Triple Crown on the line, except for, you know, something happens to the Derby winner and they don't make it to Pimlico. So you always have that going for you. But on top of that, it's just, I mean, the Derby is the Derby, and it's just so huge and so, you know, pressure-filled. And it just, like, you turn it off just a little bit. There's still a lot of pressure on the Preakness, but you turn it down a notch. And everybody just seems to be having a little bit more fun there. And the other thing that I love about the Preakness is that the NBC compound where we are is right next to the stakes barn. So you can just walk over, you know, a quarter of a mile, and here are all the horses, and you get to talk to the connections and see the horses in advance where, you know, you're kind of farther away at Churchill or Belmont. So that intimacy is really cool, too. And there's just something, obviously, to me, too, being from there, helps being born and raised in the Baltimore area. It's always nice to come back and see everybody, and that takes a little bit of an edge off too. But yeah, I love the Preakness.
And then the open bar after the race is in the barn area.
I don't know anything about that.
It's so much fun to hang out there with everybody and talk horses and be around the connections, and it's just a very unique experience. It's something that we don't get to enjoy at other racetracks, and there's nothing like the Preakness. It's fantastic.
My favorite part is getting to hear Dave Rodman's call every year.
Of course it is.
Well, yeah, we traditionally have Rodman on after the Preakness and get his thoughts and stuff before we sign off. And I don't know, with our schedule this year, it might be a little different, but it's always fun to get his impressions of it. He's called so many Preaknesses over the years, and he usually has a pretty good of opinion of what went on during the race. So it's
always
fun.
A good guy. We like Dave. I always look forward to seeing him when I get up there. We're not too far from each other the way we call the races. You know, I actually am out in the elements on the roof at Pimlico. It's the only one I call outside, and every once in a while it rains. So last year, I remember it might have rained just a little bit before the race.
Yeah, just a tad.
Yeah, just a little. Larry Kulmus here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Larry, appreciate the time, my friend. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive another gift from Embrace the Race. It will have a value of at least $350, as you specified in your email to me yesterday. So we'll pass that on to Mike D'Anzaris and let him know.
I'm sure Mike will be happy to accommodate.
Well, why wouldn't he? You're the announcer. Appreciate it, my friend. We'll see you next week.
All right. Sounds good.